Deal. So my name is Russell Spatz. I am an alcoholic. Thank you. I'm a member of the South Dixie Group. I haven't found that I should have a drink since January 25th, 1981. So I've been road testing this sobriety thing for a little over 36 years now, and I'm gonna get it right one day. And it really is a privilege to be here, and I really enjoy hanging out with alcoholics. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift of sobriety to be able to be asked to, you know, speak to alcoholics and talk a little bit about your story. I've been doing these step meetings, these kind of meetings, and I grew up on step meetings, step series. I don't know, you know, I grew up on step series with old timers and guys who had 30 years and 40 years and everything like that, and I thought this was the way it was done. And then I start going to other states and, you know, different places and outside the country. And I would say to people, where are the step series? And they'd say, what are you talking about? He says, we got discussion meetings and we got speakers meetings, and that's it. And I since learned, now I haven't been all over the world and I don't know everything, but I've since learned that pretty much things like this, a step series where they ask somebody who's got some time to, take 12 weeks out of their lives and 12 weeks to go through the steps for a three-month period of time. It's almost like ordering a college course in a sense. This kind of deal, you know, where I used to follow these guys around. They'd say Eddie Edwards is doing a step series. Joe Snyder's doing a step series. Ray O'Keefe is doing a step series. I used to find that's how I learned about the steps. And I know there's a lot of people here that, you know, my age or, you know, and been around that. And for a long time, and I knew you grew up on step series and you cut your teeth on those things because they're so mysterious at first, and you got to go to a lot of meetings over a lot of period of time to understand what the heck they're talking about. And of course, as you grow older and you mature, you see things, your vision clears up in a lot of ways, and we're going to talk about that becoming clear. What I learned is that pretty much step series is relegated to Dade and Broward County. That's pretty much it. You go outside of Dade, they may have them in Palm Beach County or something, but you go outside of South Florida, they ain't going to know what you're talking about. You know, you go to Georgia somewhere or New York somewhere or stuff like that. And, of course, a lot of my stuff is a lot of step series that from down here go out on different recordings and tapes all over the world. And we get sometimes emails from South Africa or, Africa and everything, you know, and Australia and all sort of stuff because people don't have this kind of deal going on. So it's a privilege to be able to do something like this, and a privilege to even go to a step meeting. I didn't realize how rare it is, except for this area. It's just, this is a great area for sobriety. I've been doing it for a long time. I don't know when I did my first step series. It's probably around 30 years or 31 years doing this thing. And I'm a lawyer, so I'm a paid bullshit artist. I guess that was the gift I have, the gift of gab. But in any event, I've been doing it for quite a while, and I've had my sponsor said to me, he said, you know, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. And I've learned that no matter how smart I think I am, there's no substitute for experience. You know, I would hear these guys with like 30 or 40 years, and I'd want to have what they had like this, you know what I mean? And I'd have 3 months, and I want whatever they had at 30 years, I wanted it like, you know, where do I study? I was good in school, I can get this, I'm smart. And the smart ones were bouncing out the doors, you know what I mean? The intelligent ones were bouncing out the doors, and the guys that were going through the hammer job, you know, A is like a car wash. You come in one side, you're kind of dirty and screwed up and you're kind of nuts. You know, somewhere around 3 months sober, I don't know whether you realize this, around 3 months sober, you know, the sort of fog lifts a little bit. You think you're doing great, you're in that pink cloud, you're not drinking, you're amazed. And then around 3 months sober, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and your brain is like ganging up on you. There's 16,000 voices, all bad shit about yourself and other people. And you're saying things like, now I know why I drank and what the hell's going on here and this is crazy. And, you know, and somebody once said to me, I think you have a, because I had one part of my brain saying, you're the greatest, they don't understand you, you're fantastic. And another part that said, you're a piece of shit, you ought to kill yourself. And you know, that sets off a kind of friction, which I guess scotch helped a little bit. And one guy said, well, I think maybe you're a split personality. I said, I wish I could get it down to two, I'd be okay. And it was like also, and so what happens is you start realizing somewhere along the line in AA, you know, it's hard to come at an alcoholic in a straightforward fashion because we're so well defended. You know, I was an if-onlier, a yes-butter, a you don't understander. I had all that stuff going for me. You know, I always knew. You know, if you're an alcoholic, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and true happiness, he'll have none at all. He won't have true happiness. And one of the things you don't learn about the consequences, the true consequences of being an alcoholic when you're drinking, because all you really know about is drunk. You know about drunk. You come in here because you get drunk. You come in here because you have the consequences of being drunk, DUIs, whatever it is, and you come in here because you're drunk. And when every time alcoholism pops up in your life, you don't recognize that alcoholism, all you say is, I need a drink. You know, it's never, why do you need a drink? Or how come you're always drinking? Or your regular pathetic thought life seems pretty much natural to you, you know, and you don't seem weird or anything, because the guys I was drinking with, the people I hung around, that I befriended, they thought just like I thought. They acted just, they had the same feelings I had. As a matter of fact, they had the same cliches. You know, we have the same cliches. They don't know who they're screwing with. I'll show them. I don't give a shit what they think about me. We have the same stuff going on. You know what I mean? So I don't think there's anything wrong with me. You know, because how can I be crazy? That would mean Joe is crazy, or Ralph is crazy, or Steve is crazy, and I'm an attorney. He's a doctor, and I don't even know there's another way of doing it. Well, there's some people doing it a different way from church, but they're crazy. You know what I mean? And they're nuts. And I'm the one who's getting the DUIs and getting divorced and having all sorts of imaginable stuff happen to me. So what I thought drinking was the problem. I looked some guy in the eye and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. That's why I came here. I came here because I couldn't stop drinking. And what I realized after I come in here, as they say in the book, is drinking's but a symptom. It's just a symptom. It's not even the alcohol, the true alcoholism. It was the solution. I drank alcohol because no woman, no car, no suit of clothes, no job, no anything worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. And if alcohol worked for me today the way it worked for me when I was 17 years old, I'd still be drinking it. But alcohol stopped working for me. I mean, that's the good news. It stopped working for me. But unfortunately, after you stop using the alcohol, then you have to deal with the consequences of alcoholism. And it may take years to really understand what the consequences of alcohol, they come, because because the chief characteristic is defiance. Our chief characteristic, I have a sign in my office, I'm a lawyer, and I have people that come, whether they're alcoholic or not alcoholic, they all come to my office with the same, pretty much all with the same attitude. You know, it's not my fault, I'm not guilty, I'm not to blame, you know, I didn't do it, you know, some other dude did it, or if I did it, it wasn't my fault, it was her fault, and, you know, I've got a good defense, or, you know, it's all the same stuff, and I have a sign in my office, and it's from the movie A Few Good Men, the truth, you can't handle the truth, you know, with Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth, and as they say in the Bible, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, but it's hard, because alcoholics don't like the truth, because you tell them the truth, and they say, screw you, get out of it, you know, and the way we get the truth in here, well, you know, sometimes we get a sponsor. Sometimes we're sincere. Sometimes we really do have a desire. You know, it says if you want what we have, you know, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to, you're not even ready to take a step. There's a step foot. You got to want what we have and be willing to go to any length to get it. And every once in a while we have a character. I think that happened to me. I wanted what you had. I didn't know what the hell you had, but I wanted it. And I was willing to, apparently, to go to any length to get it, whatever that any length was. And one of the lengths was is I got a sponsor. And I really wanted a sponsor, and I wanted to stay sober. And when you get a sponsor and you want a sponsor, the way it worked with me is I asked this man to be my sponsor, and he became my sponsor, and I stopped drinking. I knew a lot of it had to do with him because I would hang out with him. And when you get a sponsor and you have a relationship with a sponsor and you get a good sponsor, sometimes they say some evil shit to you. They tell you things like, Russell, if you don't have something good to say about somebody, why don't you shut up? And they say that in front of people, and they hurt your feelings. And then I thought love and tolerance was our, you know, code. And, you know, I mean, I remember saying to Bob once, I said, Bob, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. It's different. You know what I mean? I remember he was in my office once, and I said, because I always thought I should have been sponsored by Albert Einstein or Jesus or something. They weren't available. They gave me this guy who didn't even graduate grade school, you know. He's a used car salesman. I'm in my office once, and I have a wall like this in my office. And I know I told you guys it has plaques and degrees and stuff. You wouldn't believe. I've been educated so far beyond my capacity to understand anything. It's unbelievable. But I look good on paper. And they have all these stuff, you know, Department of Honors Mathematics, your National Science Foundation Fellow, you know, the whole bit, you know. And I looked at my sponsor. I was about 4 months open. I said, Bob, these are my degrees. And he says, well, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those. So if I seem a little sarcastic and weird to you, that's, you know, probably the reason why. And so, you know, but you start learning things and things start, and we sort of learn about ourselves sideways. We learn, it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and our stories are so important. Because we come in here, we have no idea what our story is, because our stories all sound the same. You know, it's not my fault. I'm not to blame. I don't know why this is happening to me. Our stories, we really have no clue, although we think we have a clue, but it has to do with a lot of other people. It has a lot to do with a lot of bad breaks, a lot of misunderstandings, a lot of you don't understand. We don't really see our stories. And as things go on, we start seeing a little bit clearer our stories. But the way we are because of our nature, because we're defying, you know, God does it in such a way so he like comes at us sideways. You know, he's like shooting me like the Redcoats and the Patriots. They're shooting behind trees. You know, like you'll go to a meeting. You know, how does that? People don't necessarily come up to you unless it's your sponsor and tell you you're crazy. Yeah, you don't go up to you and say, I don't go up to you and say, hey, what's your name? What's your name?
Alex.
You don't go up to Alex and say, you know, hey, hi, how you doing? You are one crazy son of a bitch. You don't say that to Alex. Alex says, hey, screw you. I didn't ask you. Mind your own business. Do your own pub. What happens is Alex will go to a meeting and he'll hear somebody tell a story. And Alex will, and it'll be an alcoholic story, what it was like, what happened. And it'll be one of those crazy stories. And Alex will sit there and say, man, that son of a bitch is freaking crazy. And then all of a sudden, this thought will come into Alex's mind. Shit, I did that last week. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, Alex, who thought he was generally okay, except he had a drinking problem, realizes he's flipping nuts, you know what I mean? He comes in relatively well with a slight drinking problem. He walks out flipping insane, you know what I mean? He's insane. I did this. I'm like that guy. Whatever he has, I have it. I don't even know why I did it. And, you know, so that's what happens. As time goes on, we learn a little bit more about our stories. And we become, what happens is, who we are and what we are and how we act and what we perceive has a lot to do with what we think our stories are. And, you know, I used to do this, when I used to do step series, I used to do like step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know. You know, my sponsor said one of the first things he said to me, he said, Russ, he said, you know, you've got to get rid of your ex. I had a lot of resentments because people were always letting me down. They were always screwing up, you know. So he said, you know, you gotta get your, you know, expectations on people down. And, you know, and so, like, I mean, I have to tell you, I used to do these steps. You know, most people come to step meetings, they think, well, he must be on step 4 or 5 or something. And I don't even call them steps anymore. I call them talk number 4 because I'm all over the place. Because as I've gotten older in this thing and a little bit wiser, I think, in this thing, it's all sort of clumped together as to what's important, what's not important. And the steps are basically tools to get us to a certain place where we ultimately realize there's only one thing that's important, but the steps are tools in order to clear away the rubbish, so we can have the power of God come in, because that's the only thing that's going to save you. That's what it says in the book. It says you can't manage it. You can, no other person's going to help you. Only God could, and what if he were sought? See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Although we try to figure out some other way of doing it, in the end, the truth of the matter is that God either is or he isn't. What's your decision going to be? No philosophy is going to help you. No cute code or moral code is going to help you. We got to talk about God, and that's what the book is all about. But, you know, alcoholics don't really want to do that because it has to do with a loss of control. And they want to, and alcoholics, more than any other people on the planet, really want to base their life on being able to manage their life on something they can feel, see, touch, like a car, like a woman, like a man, something they can touch and feel and see, what's shown on TV, what's shown in the movies, that makes sense to them so they can logically understand it. They don't want to hear there's some sort of force or something out there that, don't worry, if you got cancer, it's going to be okay anyway because it's the way God. They don't want to hear that stuff. They want to know they can control it and all that sort of stuff. So it's difficult for people to understand. But those that hang around for 30 years or so, 40 years, you know, pretty much know that there are material things and there are material forces and there are absolutely true spiritual forces that if you get in line with them, everything works out in your life and everything works out in your thought life and everything changes and your eyesight changes, but it's kind of hard to get it across. It's kind of a difficult thing. And in order to get it across, the big book says the way we get a new perspective, at least 12 and 12 says, the way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. We see the value of pain. We see the value of suffering. And that's why they talk in the seventh step really about the first step. But they talk about it in the seventh step in terms of other problems that we have, problems with sex and problems with spending money and all sorts of other problems that we do compulsively because we have unhealthy dependencies. And you may not notice this. Listen, believe me, I spent more money I don't have on buying shit I didn't need to impress people I didn't like, even though I don't give a shit what other people think about me. And we have so much fear of people, so much fear of, you know, what are they thinking, what are they going to think, you know. There's so much crap going on in an alcoholic's mind that block him from the truth of who and what he is. It's just amazing, and it takes a lot of pounding. How many people came in here because they had a problem with drinking? Raise your hand. How many people came in here because they had a problem with drinking that got so bad that it really made their life unmanageable? Okay. How many people had a problem with drink that was so bad, it made their life unmanageable so bad that you really were humiliated, it was a horrible situation, you came in here really, really, I'm telling you, ashamed and embarrassed, you didn't want to be here, but you're almost forced to be here because you really had a problem. Well, you know, that should give you the hint, the first hint, as to how this flipping thing's going to work. That should give you the first hint as to how this is going to work on your life over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. You know? That pain and suffering and having the shit knocked out of you is going to have a lot to do with your ultimately seeing things a little bit differently. I know you think now that you're sober, you pretty much got it down. You pretty much say, you know, but if that's the case, then what's going on in that brain of yours when you're in the shower and you're lathering up and you're saying things, I'm a piece of shit, I ought to kill myself, you know? When you're doing all that stupid self-talk to yourself and telling you what an asshole you are, what about all those fears you have? What about all that not being able to go to sleep and the worries you have about the money and about the people and the job? What are you going to do about the worry shit? What do you just tell yourself, well, that's normal? You know, live a life of quiet desperation. Well, I'm sober, but it's just normal to feel shitty all the time. It's just normal to live a life of quiet. I'm a nut. I'm crazy. I have all sorts of crazy thoughts and lustful and coveting thoughts and greedy and always feeling sorry for myself. I have all this stuff that's going on in me. I got people on my brain all the time. I go to sleep with people on my brain. I wake up with people on my brain. I'm always having problems. I'm always in crisis, like a flipping melodrama, you know, a soap opera. And what do you tell you? I guess you tell yourself something like this. He says, well, I guess this is just the way life is. This is just the way it is, right? How can it be any different? You think it's like normal, right? Well, it's normal for you. But what do we do about that part in the book that says we experience so much of heaven and we're rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we not even dream? What do we do with that part in the book where it says we have a new freedom and a new happiness? We lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. What do we do with that part of the book that says if we make this decision sincerely, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need. If we stay close to him, perform our works well. Perform his works well. We lose concern about other of our little plans and designs, and we start being concerned with other people. We lose fear of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. We're reborn. What do we do with those parts of the book? What do we do with all the parts in the book that say our life is on a whole different plane? We actually start thinking inspirationally. We have inspirational thinking. We come to rely upon it. You know, what do we do with all those parts in the book, with all the promises that people like to read? What do we do with all those promises people like to read and post on the walls, you know, like it's really going to happen when they're not living them? And then but every once in a while, what do you do with that guy that you run into every once in a while in Alcoholics Anonymous that seems to have something going on? You know, it's like I play golf and Tiger Woods plays golf, but trust me, we're playing a different game. You know, I use this nice clubs, I got the whole thing, professional and everything like that. And believe me, whatever game Tiger Woods is playing is different than the game I'm playing. What happens when you run into somebody in here and they're few and far between that seems to be playing a different game? Where you say things like, man, I don't know what's going on with that guy. What happens when you run into Al Kennedy? What happens when you're 3 months sober and you go to a meeting and you hear a guy like Al Kennedy with 30 years and he's trying to lift people up and he's loving on people and he's helping people, you know, and he tells this magnificent story and he just fills you with inspiration. Then he walks out the door. What happens when you turn to your sponsor and you say to your sponsor, man, that guy was great. And your sponsor turns to you and says, he's dying of cancer. And you say, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke. He says, yeah, the guy who just spoke. He's dying. What do you mean he's dying of cancer? He just gave a great meeting and he helped these people and he didn't even mention dying. He says, Russ, he's dying of cancer. He's got 6 months to live. What happens when right before your eyes, you see a guy who's dying of cancer and he's not talking about himself and he's not worried and he's not feeling sorry for himself and he's just trying to help other people? What the hell do you do with that? What the hell do you do with that when you, is that for me? That shows very large personal growth on my part, by the way. It does. It really does. I'll tell you. What do you do with somebody like that when you were just in a meeting, when you just did six meetings crying about a hangnail? You know what I mean? What do you do? I mean, there's something going on. He's like a Tiger Woods in AA. That guy's got something. He's got something that I don't have. How do you do that? How do you get to that deal? You know what I'm talking about? No, you know, when that kind of, that was probably an accident. When that used to happen, I guess it depends upon the mood I'm in, you know? It depends upon my mood. I used to say things like, you know a person, you know when a person won't stay sober when they can't turn down their phone, turn off their phone for a lousy hour in an AA meeting. I used to say shit like that. I don't know whether that helped or hurt people, but they probably walked out of here probably with resentment. They probably never fucking forgot it. But then I did it one night. I did it one night, and during the meeting, my phone went off. So, you know, you learn a lot of shit in this thing, you know. God has a way of teaching you humility, you know what I mean, and not judging people and stuff like that. So you all, during this marvelous talk, you're all probably wondering, when am I going to get to talk about something that has to do with any of the steps? This is actually had to do with all the steps, but I'm actually going to talk about the fourth step tonight, but not in a way that you've ever heard it, you know, or I don't think. Maybe you have heard it, but generally the stuff I hand out. What I pray, what I really want to do is I want to try to... I want to give people something that maybe they haven't heard before. Not the same old stuff, you know. And so maybe you've heard it, maybe you haven't heard it. So I'm going to tell you a little bit. I used to do these steps. I've been sober 36 years. I mean, I can't help it. That's just the way it is. So I am a product of 36 years of going through cancer twice. I'm married for 35 years, got four kids, raised six grandkids, self-supporting through my own contributions. Any crap that you guys have gone through, I've gone through it. I've gone through the foreclosure. I've gone through the money problems. I've gone through my wife, you kidding me? Been married for 35 years. What do you think that's all about? My wife's an Alcoholics Anonymous. Our lady's a perpetual revenge. You know what I'm talking about? Unbelievable, you know? She does a great 10th step. Al-Anon 10th step. When I'm wrong, she promptly admits it, you know? And it's like unbelievable shit. You wouldn't believe it. She sent my little granddaughter Andrea in to see me. I'm in the office. I'm typing in the office, in the home office, and Andrea comes. She's cute as a bunny. She says, "Grandpa, what kind of fish are you?" I said, "I'm sorry, Andrea. What?" He says, "What kind of fish are you?" I said, "I don't know, Andrea. What kind of fish am I?" He says, "You're a selfish." My wife's in the kitchen laughing, you know. Whatever, you know. Because they go to Al-Anon, they think they know all about the steps and how you're not doing them and all that sort of stuff. So I've been married for a long time because you can get married. Because the secret of being married for a long time is just admit that you're wrong all the time. You know what I mean? You're the worst husband in the world. Probably right about that one. You know? You never take out the garbage. Yeah, right again. Another one. There's no point in it, you know, just give up the fight, you know. And so that's the deal. So in any event, I'm going to talk about a little bit, something about the fourth. So what's happened is whereas, you know, maybe when I was 5 years sober and doing these meetings, I'd say things like, well, this is how I did the fourth step. And I'd read from the book and I'd show you the chart and I'd talk about the four lists and I told you mechanically, but you got a spine. You can read the book. It's got a chart, for God's sakes. You can read the book. You can talk to your spine. I'm not going to do that stuff. You know, it's nothing wrong with that. But I'm going to talk to you about it from a different level, a different deal. So here it goes. And maybe this will work with you. Maybe it won't. But the point is, it'll work with me because it helps me out. Okay. So, and after all, I'm the most important thing in my. You know, I'm my favorite. You know, that's what it says. Selfishness, self-centeredness. Me. How am I going to solve that problem where I'm always thinking about me? Well, it's very easy. We just come in here and just talk about yourself all the time. You know? Just talk about me. Oh, enough of me. David, tell me. What do you think about me? Yeah. Let's talk about you. You know? Talk about you. What do you think about me? So, when I was... how many guys in here... like women? Now, I'm not going to pick on the women. I'm just saying, you know, you sort of like them. You like looking at them, you know. You know, they're sounding kind of cute, aren't they? Like bumpy men, you know. And they're. I always liked women. You know, when I was 15 years old, I discovered Playboy magazine. Anybody here ever read Playboy magazine? Well, I never read Playboy magazine. That is true. I realized that next to booze, as a matter of fact, I think I realized that a beautiful woman is really, that was really my disease. But I was scared of women. I mean, I would never admit that to anybody, but I'm going to admit it to you, I was scared of women. But when I was drunk, I was like Brad Pitt on steroids. Man, you put a couple of drinks on me, I was a lounge lizard, you wouldn't believe, you know? Man, this stuff is bad for me. This is the only shit that's good for me, you know? You put me in a bar with a couple of drinks next to a gal buying her drinks, and it's, let me tell you something, it's a bad deal. So when I was, so I just knew, you know, you somehow, you know, there's certain things you just know. You know, one of the things that happens, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is every 5 minutes you get this idea in your life, you're an if-onlier. If only I had that gal, I'd be okay. If only I had that car, I'd be able to get that gal and I'd be okay. If I only had that money, I'd be able to buy that car and I could get that gal and then it'd be okay. If I only had that job, then I could get that money and I could buy that car and then I could have that gal and then I'd be okay. And then everybody else would think I would was okay because I'd walk in that gal. And I know that's okay because I know that's right because I would walk into the bar with that gal on my arm and I'd feel like $1 million. I'd feel good. And if I didn't have that gal and it was Saturday night, I'd feel bad. You get this? With gal, feel good. What's your name?
Alberto.
Do you understand what I'm talking
Absolutely.
About? Okay, because I see you. With gal, you don't have to say amen, but I see you nodding your head. You know? Listen, Alberto, this is the way it was. With good-looking gal in the bar, good. Without bar, good-looking gal in the bar, bad. You know what I mean? And, you know, as a result of that, certain little things happen. Like, you'll be able to see things. You react certain ways. Like, you'll sit in the bar with, I'll be sitting with Alberto, And Dave there, who I don't even know, will be like 50 feet away, and he'll walk in the door of the bar. I don't even know this guy, and he'll be with a good-looking gal. And I'll turn to Alberto and I'll say, "Look at that asshole." And I know I hate this guy. You know, I don't know why I hate him. But there's something about him. You know what I mean? I don't know why I feel that way. And you know, if you're an alcoholic, one of the consequences is your feelings are like real important. You know what I'm talking about? Feelings are important. You don't realize how important they are. As a matter of fact, all you want to do is talk about your feelings. You want to talk about you. You want to worship your feelings. I mean, you don't understand. Yeah, I killed your wife and shot your dog, but you don't know how you got me angry. You don't know, you know, it's all feelings and emotions and it sort of screws you up and you do crazy shit, you know? And so that leads me to say in... when I was about 20 years old, 20, 21, 20, I don't know, 19, it's all, I'm 60, I'm not sure how old I am. I'll be 68 in March. So when I was, I'm in a weird kind of mood because I did that stress test today on the treadmill. Anybody ever done to do with that? Yeah, I did. Ooh, not bad. You know, and I'm looking at all the people that are doing it around me and they're all old, you know? And I'm doing it, and I'm huffing, and I'm puffing, and, you know, like the doctor says, he says, "Hey, you're okay." He says, "You'll probably make it through the meeting tonight." He said. But afterwards, it's like a coin flip. You know what I mean? It's I don't know. I don't give you. It's like a 50-50 whether you're going to make it home. But in any event, so when I was about 20 years old, I was at the University of Miami, and this gal walked in the door, and she had legs up to here, and she was gorgeous. She was a former cheerleader and everything. And I said to myself in my mind, you ever notice like the if only? You say, if only I had this, if only. You're always like reinvent. You always know that if you had this and then you go to get that and you get that and you're great for like a week And then all of a sudden it turns to shit, and they say, well, if I only had that, or if I was only in Milwaukee, or if I only had a bigger house. Or only... I have been grabbing shit and stuff in my life, romance, stuff, women, cars, and everything, to make myself feel okay. And you know, it's like booze. It does... I wouldn't do it if it didn't work. It works, but it's all so freaking temporary, you know what I mean? And then you got to go for another one, another thing, and some of these things come with freaking contracts, you know? You buy a car, and you got to pay for 36 months. You get married, and you got to be with her for, like, ever, you know what I mean? It's like all that you don't realize. You're just doing it because you know it's going to work and make you feel good. What do you do when you marry somebody and you have kids, and then all of a sudden a week later, you're saying, what am I even doing here, you know what I mean? Fred, you don't know what it's like. You know what I mean? You're laughing. So I said, I looked at this guy. I said, if I can have that gal, I would never. This would be the. And so, you know, I'm an alcoholic. You know what happens when an alcoholic wants something? It's like laser. You know, I mean, I'm like, I'm doing everything. I'm the nicest guy in the world. I'm buying. I'm doing. I'm meeting the parents. I'm doing the whole bit. Marry that gal. Big wedding at the country club. Everything's okay. Wonderful. You got the house on Miami Beach. You know, go through law school. You know, get the job. You got the whole bit. Have the child and the vet. And there was only one problem. After about a year, I just didn't come home. I would stay in the bar and drink, and look at the other women. I never cheated on her, unless you count not going home while she's fixing dinner with the child, and drinking in a bar. Looking at other women and thinking about cheating on her, unless you count that as cheating. I mean, I think as a lawyer, I can say it's not technically cheating, you know what I mean? It's pretty much being an asshole, you know what I mean? And it's not, and if anybody's ever gotten to the point where they got sober and they had a relationship with somebody and they didn't come home and you're waiting for them and you know how that feels and you don't know where they are, then you understand what damage you're causing to other people. But you have to understand, you would have to be sober in order to experience that, you know what I mean? And that kind of thing. But I'm out there. All I know is it's like 2 or 3 years. I'm married, and all of a sudden I'm not happy anymore. And I realized why I was not happy. Because when you're an alcoholic, the one thing you know is you know what makes you happy. If I only had that gal, if I only had that car, if I only had that job, you know immediately what will make you happy. If I only had more money, and you'll know immediately what's making you unhappy. And I knew I was unhappy because I was married to this gal. Because she was stopping me from doing the stuff that would make you happy, get a new gal. And it was kind of like a mixed feeling, like, because you got mixed feelings, because I don't want to be with this gal. She's a wonderful gal. She's a nice gal. She's a wonderful mother. But I don't want to be with her because it's obvious to me, because when you're an alcoholic, you're a rationalizer. You tell yourself rational lies that you believe. It's obvious that we got married too young. We were different people. We really didn't know what was going on. It's not my fault. We really don't belong together. As a matter of fact, she'd be better off without me and everything like that. And I'm obviously, we're in the wrong marriage, and I do have a child, but then I got that other thing, but I got this kid, you know what I mean? And I've got her, and I love her parents, and they love me, and they've been nice to me. So I got this, I like the guilt, I got the fear, I got the want this, and I want that. So one day she says to me, and so I'm sitting in the bar and I'm drinking, I'm carrying, and one day she says to me, and I'm like done with, I'm like, I got to get out of this marriage. But I'm scared to get out of the marriage. But I feel guilty about getting married. So I'm not even saying I did this on purpose. What I did was I didn't come home, and I came up home drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning every night. You know, maybe not every night, but most nights. And one time she said to me, she said, I just want you to know, I was sober, it was a Friday morning. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Because apparently she had self-esteem, whatever that is. And she said, she says, I just want you to know, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And I, as a matter of fact, I left my house, and I stopped at the first light, and I said to myself, I said, what the hell did she mean by that? I mean, that's part of the consequence of alcoholism, is when anybody tells you something, you don't want to hear. You know what I mean? When you tell you something you don't want to hear, what happens is it doesn't make sense to you. It confuses you. It was very simple. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I drive up to line. I said, what the hell do you mean by that? You know what I mean? So I went to the bar, and I didn't forget it. I said to my friend Doug, I said, Ronnie said, if I come home drunk one more time, she'll leave me. He said, ah, she loves you. You're a great guy. She'll never leave you. You know, which is, you know, oh, that's why I love drinking buddies, because that's what I was thinking, you know what I mean? And no, she really mean it, and I had a couple of drinks, and I was an alcoholic, so you know what happens when you have a couple of drinks. You know, I had already crossed over that line where once I had my first drink, no matter how strong it was, I didn't know where, and I 4 o'clock in the morning. I come home. Next day, I'm kicked out of the house, which you may think is bad. But I'm walking to my car. I'm saying, I'm free. I'm free to go to the bars. This is the greatest. I drank myself. I was such a jerk. No, I'm not saying I'm a jerk. I'm saying I'm free. I'm just saying I'm just thinking about myself. You know, I'm always doing, thinking about me. And I that's the deal. And I get him, I leave, and we went to a marriage counselor, and the marriage counselor, and that was, I went there because I felt guilty. You know, I had to go and go through it. And I said, oh my God, I'm being dragged back into this thing again. And they said, Ronnie, what do you think, what are the three things you want to change about Russell? She was saying something, and I wasn't even paying attention because, you know, I'm saying this is not going to wind up good. You know, and she said something, you know, stop drinking. You know, I don't know what she said, come home for dinner or whatever she said. And I knew this wasn't going to be good. And then she asked me, well, Russell, what are the three things you want to change with Ronnie? And I said, I just want to date other women. And that was the end of the session, you know, and that was the end of it. But here's the deal. If somebody asked me, what happened with your marriage? The last thing I would have said was, I'm an alcoholic. I drank myself. The last thing I would have said was I did anything wrong. What I would have said is I would have said, we got married too young. We were different people. You know, she didn't understand me. I didn't understand her. When we got married, I was a drinker. I went out. All of a sudden, I got sober, and she wanted me to stay home and everything. We were completely different. You know, I would say that she wanted to change me. She wanted to change me. You know, she wanted to be like a... wanted me to be like an adult. She wanted, you know, one of the things it says, one of the books they used, if you read Dr. Bob in Good Old Time, was 1 Corinthians 13. Before the big book was written, between the first 4 years, they studied the book of James, Sermon on the Mount, and 1 Corinthians 13. There's a great line in 1 Corinthians 13. It says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. We see through a glass darkly, but soon everything will be revealed. And I was a child. I mean, most alcoholics, if you talk to them long enough, you realize you're dealing with a 10-year-old. You realize you're dealing with a crybaby 10-year-old with feelings and everything. No adult there at all. No adult home. 60 years old, I don't care. There's not an adult at home, you know? There's a guy, you know, and he's got a car and he's got money, but there's no adult present, you know? And, you know, the growth has stopped. And I honestly thought that, and I paid my child support and I did my thing, but my deal was, this was not my fault. I'm not to blame. I did everything right. I paid the child support. We were different people. It's better that I go away and everything like that. And that was my story. That was the truth. I was telling the truth. I wasn't lying. I was telling the truth. And that's who I was. That's who Russell Spatz was. 3-4 years after 5 years, 10 years, even now after going to AA, my story, let me tell you the other story. My story was this. I married a wonderful gal, a sweet gal who got married, and the vows meant something to her. She had integrity. And it meant you love, honor, obey your wife. And you love, honor, obey your husband. And unfortunately, I was a bum. I was a bum in a 3-piece suit, but I was a bum. I had no integrity. I had no capability of ever having any relationship with any human being, because the only person I ever thought about was myself. And the only thing I cared about was myself and my feelings. So if it didn't feel right, I would ditch you or figure out a way of screwing you or ditching you in 5 seconds. It didn't matter if there was a 3-year-old child. It didn't matter if we had a house. It didn't matter. And nothing mattered but my happiness, because that's the only thing I cared about. And what I did is I ripped this young gal's heart out. I lied to her. I had no integrity, you know, I had no spirituality, and what I did was I destroyed the marriage, and I walked away, and that's who I was. And you want to know something? And I was a child, and I was a baby, and I was wrong, and I was incapable of being a decent human being. Because you know who does stuff like that? Bums do stuff like that, and that's what I was. I was a bum in a 3-piece suit, thinking I was a big shot. And you want to know what that is, by the way? That's the truth. That's the truth. I'm not ashamed to tell you. That's the truth. I'm not ashamed to tell you that's the truth, because I'm not ashamed of that being the truth, because reason I know that truth is because the God of my understanding has shown that truth to me. And that's what God will do for you. What God will do for you, it will lift you from a guy who's blaming everything on his former wife and saying she didn't understand me and I was different, to a person who sees the truth. Now, what you need to understand about that, and the fourth and fifth step is all about this sort of stuff, allowing God to come in and shine a light so you can see the truth about yourself in the story. What you need to understand about that story and how the fourth and fifth steps, and why it's important to understand who you are and what you are, is that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says this: selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Now listen to this. Let's assume that this book is true. I mean, let's assume that you maybe think, well, part of it is true for you, but let's just make believe, since it's been around for 75 years and a lot of people got sober, that everything in this book is true, whether you understand it or not. Now, this is what it says. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our problem, your problem. Then it says driven, now listen to this, by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on toes of others, they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we've made decisions based upon self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Self will run riot. We must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Let's say that's true. And let's focus on the part where it says self-delusion, being deluded, not even having a clue of what's really going on, but thinking you know everything, thinking you know what's going on. So what I thought for many, many years, not only about her, but a lot of other things in my life, is that it's not my fault, I'm not to blame, there's nothing wrong here, you know what I mean? And I told you what I thought about my marriage. That's what I thought. That was story one. I've been in AA for many years now. The second story I told you, that's story two. For many years out of my life, story one was my story. Now, for many years, for the last 30 years, story two is my story. You asked me about my marriage, that's my story. Let me tell you this, so that you understand this. You are what your story is. You think based on what you decide what your story is about yourself is the way you treat and deal with other people. It's the way you think about yourself. It's the way you act towards other people. It's the kind of person you are. Your story about who you are and why you do things has a lot to do with how you're going to be as a human being. Now, let me ask you this. If you were picking out a friend, somebody that you really wanted to rely on, somebody you wanted to have a relationship with, somebody you wanted to trust, you know, with confidences, would you pick the guy who has story one or the guy who has story two? Who would you want to be your friend? Who would you want to hang out with? Story one or story two? Who would you want to marry? Story one or story two? Who would you want as your best friend? Story one or story two? And the problem is when you're an alcoholic, even when you're sober, unless you go through the grind and you go through what we all go through, you're stuck in story one. And here's the problem. You're not only stuck in story one, you think you're right. You think it's the truth. And you know somebody, it is the truth for you. It's unfortunate, because you'll never be able to have a decent relationship. You're always going to have crap on your mind. You're always going to be feeling guilty. There's always going to be something wrong. You're always going to be having people on your mind. So how do you change that deal? And that's what steps four and five are all about. And even steps four and five, with everything we do over and over again, because it's really a basis for living, how we think about ourselves. It's right out of Sermon on the Mount. We don't look at the speck in our brother's eyes. We look at the beam in our eyes. You know what I mean? If there's something wrong with another person, we make amends for the other. The way it tells us to live teaches us, and over a period of years, you may do step four and five and get a certain amount out of it, and you may be doing it for years, taking inventory for years continuously. That's what the 10th step is all about, and learn more and more about yourself. I mean, this story I just told you about my first wife, the story two story. This isn't something I was telling this story when I had 1 year of sobriety, 2 years of sobriety. Some of this stuff, let me tell you something. The stuff about the psychiatrist, I mean, the therapist, that story I told you, which is a true story, where I said, I sat in a room and I said to the psychologist, I just want to date other women, that story, and realized all of a sudden the pit of my stomach, what that must have done to her, and how that. You know something? You know when I started thinking about that story, or I even remember that story? When I had 15 years. when I had 50, I never used to tell that story because I didn't even remember that story. And one day I had 15 years of sobriety. Maybe I heard somebody in a meeting. I don't know what happened. All of a sudden I remember, holy crap. I sat there and he asked me, and I remembered that. And then I started thinking, man, what, that must have really, and I had already made amends with my first wife. I mean, things, you know, it's just like it says in 1 Corinthians 13. You see through a glass darkly, but things will be revealed. You start doing this thing, God will reveal things to you about yourself. And the more you get closer to the truth about yourself and know who and what you are, well, I'll tell you, it's got to humble you to a certain extent. You know, I'm not such a big shot, you know. I'm not as bad as I think I am. It's not as good as I think I am. And it changes your life, your perception of life, your perception of other people. You know, so that's a little stuff on the fourth step. So I think that's it. I burn the hour. Okay, so we have no dues or fees. We're entirely self-supporting.